Okay, we're good. How are you?
Okay.
Good. Hi, guys. Sorry we're a bit late. But
It's
here we are. How are you?
I'm like we were saying, like just a little bit frazzled, but do you know what? I've had a deep breath and now I'm fine. Yeah.
Yeah, deep breath. Then we'll focus on this for 45 minutes and then go back to being frazzled all over again.
Yeah.
I said this is part of being self-employed. One of my best friends, Courtney, was like to me today, like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. I would love to like not have to go into an office every day. And I was like, you say that. I was
Yeah.
like, there are pros and cons of being self-employed. Not having to go into an office every day is certainly a pro. I'm still covered in this rash.
Still not gone.
No, and everyone's saying
Do
it's like post-viral hives and it'll go, but it's definitely getting worse before it gets better. And how many weeks has it been now?
a
Three,
lot.
four? Oh God, guys, honestly, it's so ugly. Never going to be able to get naked ever again. Okay, let's jump into the question. Hi, I can't make the live today, but two hopefully quick questions. I take creatine tablets and I have them first thing in the morning. Is it okay to have them on an empty stomach? I've never had any issues. You answered your own question. If you've never had any issues, then there's no issue with you doing that.
Yeah, like from it, if we're being like really like pedantic, I mean, it's probably absolutely fine, right? But there is some research that shows that if you have creatine with food, it's more likely to be more easily transported into your muscles. Now, that would only really be something I'd be worried about, or not worried about, but even consider on like a short-term loading basis. Like if you're like
Yeah.
continuously taking this over weeks and weeks and weeks and months and years, it doesn't really matter. You're probably going to have saturated your muscles already.
Yeah. Yeah. So just to elaborate on what Emma is saying there, if it is the beginning of a loading phase, then that could really help speed up the process. But if you've already been doing this for a long period of time, and then it's not really relevant. Second question, for glute workouts, is there any benefit to these, if you don't want to increase your glutes? I do body weight ones, but I don't include anything more than this. Is that okay? Hang on. She says, for glute workouts, is there any benefit to doing these if you don't want to increase your glutes? No, it's the long and short answer of that. I do body weight ones, but I don't include anything more than this. I don't understand what that means. And then she says, is this okay? I'm happy doing push-pull legs. If you are not focused on growing your glutes and you don't care about growing your glutes, then doing a push-pull leg split is great. You don't need to do any glute-specific workouts. I think you mean because I've got a glute-specific workout in there. But no, you don't need to be doing that. And you'll be working your glutes, which is important. Even if you don't care about having a bubble butt, whatever, you will be working your glutes and your lower body workout and that. And again, it is important for that kind of balanced physique, both in terms of like anatomically, but also a balanced physique visually. Emma?
Yeah, I'm also just like, right, if we think, is muscle important to health? Yes. What is the biggest muscle in your body? Your glutes.
Is it?
I know, now I'm like, wait.
I don't think it is. I think it's like the third.
Why? What's your biggest then?
Pretty sure it goes either quads or lats are the first, and then glutes. And
I mean,
even then, I'd question if glutes and hamstrings are kind of tied in a way.
well, yeah, but the gluteus maximus is the largest,
Is
most
it?
powerful muscle in the human body.
Shut up. I always thought it was lats and quads, like, and then glutes and hammies. Wow. I'm educated. Well done.
Wow.
Is
I
it?
mean,
That also just like it says a lot about how shit my glutes are, guys.
it doesn't. Yeah, they're not the biggest in your. I mean, I can't talk. They're definitely not. Mine's definitely lats. But anyway, my point being, if you agree with the fact that muscle is important to health and glucose clearance and healthy aging and staying agile and bone mineral density, like on all the benefits of having muscle, then do you want to work the biggest muscle in your body? Like 100%, yeah.
Yeah, shit. Fuck, guys. Now I'm really upset.
Sorry about that.
Anyway, carry on. Is there anything on the live? Sorry.
Just hello from Sunny Suffolk. And then Joe, morning ladies, getting steps in on a hotel treadmill before sitting on my ass on a plane for the rest of the day. Happy to make a live. Well done.
Love that.
And then morning beauties, so sorry you're still itchy. Hope it subsides soon.
Who's that from?
Janet or Jeanette? It's, no, it's Janet because there's no E at the end.
Thanks, Janet. So, it's just so ugly. I don't know if you can see it on camera.
Okay, I can see a few little... Wait, no, they're just freckles, no?
No, it's my rash.
Oh, that's quite bad.
Yes, it's bad. It's ugly and bad. Okay.
I didn't realize they were like, looks almost like
big. It's like big red. Big red dots everywhere. So
I'm like, definitely going to screenshot that after this. like smiling at your tip.
I'm basically being a really professional coach today, getting the biggest muscle groups on the body wrong and then showing my tits on camera. Well, guys, it happens sometimes, you know. We're not always having a great day, okay? Okay, anything else?
No, we're good.
Okay, Emily Jade. Hi, Clemma. Any tips on improving recovery between sessions other than sleep? I'm quite consistent in getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep in a night, and while I know not to trust what my Whoop band says as I train anyway, it's indicated significantly poor recovery over the last week or so, and I've really felt it too. I'm not sure whether I'm overtraining my body or if my body's just naturally wanting a rest after weeks of progressive overload. Yeah, probably. I just don't want poor recovery to be impacting muscle building. Thank you. Okay, so I wouldn't really go on what the Whoop band said. It says I'd go on how you feel. So signs that you are under-recovered and overtraining include feeling lethargic, both mentally and physically, but like chronically, not like, oh, I'm having a bad day where I feel tired and I'm struggling, but like having a bad day every day, getting poorly often, your immune system taking a beating. That's how I know that I need to pull back. Being sore a lot, not feeling like you're recovering, finding that your volume, whether that's sets, reps or load lifted, is taking a huge hit for me, load lifted. My God, I have to, like, I'll just go in the gym one day and instead of being able to squat 60 kg, I can only squat 40. There's a sign. And so what we would want you to do really is do a deload week, and that can look like a number of different things, but really we just want to decrease volume so we can decrease your training frequency during the week. We can decrease your sets. And I think is it 70 something percent by which we want to reduce it. So for example, instead of doing 3 sets, you do 1, you can maintain the load lifted. But we would bring down your working sets. And yeah, that's what I have to say on that, Emma.
I mean, I think you answered that incredibly well. I don't think I've got much to add. Maybe just, I guess the other thing is like you could just be getting a little bit unwell. Or, yeah, you know, if you're like, oh, you know, I've been fine. And then just this week, like everybody has weeks like that. And I think sometimes you can read a little bit too much into it. Like, but it might be the week before your period, or it might be that you're under the weather a little bit or something else. So I agree with Chloe, listen to your body, take a bit of a deload. But it, yeah, there might not necessarily have to be a drastic change. It might just be that you need a couple of days of lower intensity or just even a few days off.
Yeah. Laura and Co. I don't know if I'm saying your name right. Law. I like it, whatever it is. Law, I think it is Law. Okay, what can you do to effectively target your midsection? My general weight is an obvious issue. I am working on it, but I mainly look 6 or 8 months pregnant and it really brings me down. Help, thank you. So this is really about basic fat loss, and it is important that if you do store weight around the middle that you lose it, because it is a sign of potentially dangerous metabolic syndrome waiting in the wings. So we just want to get it down. And it really is just about basic fat loss, which is about being in a negative energy balance, meaning that you're taking on less calories, aka energy, via food than you're expending via movement, both neat non-exercise activity. So that's steps, for example, And workouts and any added cardio. So we just need to make sure that you're in that negative energy balance, that you're adhering to it. And as you lose body fat, it will come down. And we actually have some amazing before and after photos of people who've had the exact same problem who are now shredded. And it's really very impressive. So you're on the right track and you're in the right place. Emma.
The only little things that I would consider as well is like your age. And if you're preferably storing body fat viscerally or around your middle, maybe because of some hormonal changes, like going through menopause. The second thing would be, if you're saying that you constantly look like, or it kind of feels like you're X months pregnant, it sounds a little bit like bloating as well. And I don't know, like you'd need, I don't know enough from just that to know that if it is that or not, but just have a think, like, is it like that all the time? Is there certain times of day? Have you noticed certain foods are like suiting you better than others? I would consider that as well. And then the other benefit of exercise is that it peripherally, is that the right word? Anyway, you lose more visceral fat doing diet and exercise than just diet alone, even if calories are matched. So it's a very good thing that you're on the easy method and you're exercising.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything on the live?
Nikki's just saying, careful you don't call your rash your gash.
I've got such an ugly big red gash.
Spotty. Itchy.
People be like, are you sure this isn't Jenna's love these days? So red and itchy. Oh, it's fine. I'm sure it'll go. What the thing is that, like, and this is where I dare to go mentally, what if it never goes away?
Of course it will. But I know that it feels like that, like after a couple of weeks, you're like, oh my God, what, like, is this my life now? But it definitely won't be.
I'm going out for my friend's birthday party this Friday. Big night out. All of my absolutely knockout, drop dead gorgeous friends and me. I'm like, how am I going to cover this? I'm going to have to wear a head to toe catsuit. And I am not in shape enough to be rocking a catsuit right
what?
Now.
I don't know. Anyone could pull that off.
No.
It's you.
Not right now. It may be in a month. I'm getting there, but not right now. I'm just like, fuck, what am I going to do? Oh, well. I don't know how to go out and not dress like a complete streetwalker. I don't know how to do this.
I mean, why would you?
I know. Anyway, okay, anything else?
Anna, I've been doing the 3 gym workouts every week, but not done any cardio. This is totally a change for me, as I used to only do cardio and no weights. I've lost 5 kilograms and I'm loving doing the weights, but just wondering if I should do any cardio now as well as the weights, and how much.
Yeah, I like, you can either finish your gym sessions with like 10 to 20 minutes of a bit of moderate intensity cardio, which I think is important for health. Or you can do like an added session of cardio a week if you have the time and inclination. I like a bit of cardio. You don't need to go mad with it, but I do like a bit of cardio, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And if you're limited on time, HIIT training is phenomenal for the health benefits on short time.
Mm-hmm. I'm now just trying to Google the biggest muscles. Can you just Google the biggest muscles on the body in order? Because now I'm just like, well, I've had this wrong forever.
Okay. You do the next question.
Can I just say, I think it's either, so now we know it's glutes, which I'm shook by, and then either lats or quads, and then I guess hamstrings, and then chest.
Glutes followed by quads, then lats, then hamstrings, then chest. Yeah, pecs.
Okay, so fine. It was just glutes.
Well done.
Well, no, because, you know,
failing. Okay, but what do you think?
Calves.
What? The smallest?
No, shoulder. Oh, abdominals are the smallest. Rectus abdominis, I should say, to be specific. No.
No, it's something in your ear. I mean, I knew it would be like, you know, one that you don't actually work out.
No, we don't care about the rest of them. That's fine. I wonder where pelvic floor comes in that list.
I feel like it, like, I mean, it depends what you're, when you say big, like, because that's quite like spread, it's thin, yeah. Spread, yeah. Right? So you're talking about surface area, you're talking about muscle volume, then we'd really have to consider that, you know?
My physio, one of my physios, has a real bee in his bonnet about the term core, So he was like, what is your core? Like, what does that even mean? I was like, well, to me, that means abdominals and back, like your trunk.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, but have you not noticed how like every gym and all these classes, it's like your core. And he's like, what are you even talking about? Like the core is not a muscle. It's like quite a few very intricate muscles all inserting it. And I was like, yeah, maybe it's because we know what we mean when we say it. And then I think he's referring to like a bracket of people who just think the core is like a muscle. I don't know. What do you think about the term?
Pedantic thing. I think it's a bit pedantic. You know, it's like when personal trainers are like, someone will be like, oh yeah, I just want to tone up. Oh, sorry, actually toning's not a thing. It's like,
no, but okay. That annoys me. I'm like,
oh no, nah, I'm like, just a bit like, you have to use the wording.
Some language. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like when everyone went on a campaign about like not saying clean eating. And I was like, kind of know what it means. It's not great, but everyone knows what it means. So sometimes you just like clean up the diet. It's like, oh God, you fucking know what I mean. I know what you're talking
about. You can't say, you know, like, oh, I've been good, you know, I've had a good diet or a bad diet. And, you know, it's like, it does get a little bit like, well, how do you communicate with your clients? And then what happens genuinely is that people who market in a way that people can understand, i.e. saying,
clean up better.
Or,
oh, yeah.
Have a good diet, or you know, things that people can actually understand, like use your core, not use your rectus abdominal. Like, they're actually gonna do way better, and actually,
way better.
You're kind of shooting yourself in the foot a little bit.
It's terminology matters, and being succinct and being like understandable, digestible matters. It matters. So, I completely agree. I was a bit like, I think he's sick and tired of just seeing he's a very good physio that's been working in a commercial gym environment for a bit too long. I think he's a bit jaded and angry. Okay, anything else?
Do you know the one I do struggle with though is binge eating?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
because I still think it's like so many people come to us saying they're binge eating and they're not, they're overeating.
Yeah.
But yeah. if you know don't say that word, then people are like, I don't know, the people that do use that word are more likely to attract the people that they want to help. And but then obviously binge eating disorder is an eating disorder that we would refer out. So yeah,
that's the difference. It can be that kind of coaching targeted to that kind of audience can be unbelievably helpful for some people who are really struggling with it, and actually really work against a bracket of people who are just comfort eating or emotional eating, which we talk about all the time, is a very human, normal thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. When adding cardio to weight training, do you need a rest day afterwards? No, not necessarily. Yeah, it really just depends. Like if you're not recovering well, like all the stuff we just spoke about at the start, really, then yeah, we might introduce another rest day, but most people will be absolutely fine.
Yeah, it's actually a nice thing to do for recovery. If we're talking balls to the wall hit, maybe a different kettle of fish, but doing a little bit of cardiovascular activity in between weighted sessions or after weighted sessions is actually a nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, speaking of pelvic floor, can you make improvements even a bazillion years after having kids? Asking for a friend. Yes.
The muscle, just like anything else, you could be like, I've never done a sit-up in my life and I'm 40. If I, you know, enter my negative energy balance and I start doing 100 sit-ups a day, every day, am I going to start to see abdominal muscles, even though I've never trained them before? Yes. It's exactly the same for your pelvic floor.
Okay. Up to date.
Okay. Olivia Jaskolka. Oh, I like saying that. Morning, ladies. I would love it if you could educate me a bit on PCOS and the effects that it has on fat loss. I was diagnosed age 15, but I've never really considered myself a sufferer because I don't have any symptoms. Yeah, that was like me. I only know that I have it due to scans for other things. Yeah, and radiographers have told me that I have cysts. I guess this is why I've never looked too much into it, because I really don't feel affected by it. When you guys asked at the start of the round if you have PCOS, let us know. I didn't immediately think, oh, that's me. It's been mentioned briefly in a few different lives, and it's got me thinking about why it matters. I'm trusting the process during this first round, but historically, I would have considered myself to be the type of person that needs to eat lower calories and lower carbs to lose weight. Yeah, but everybody thinks that they're that person. Like, that is like, you are the rule, not the exception. Could it be why? And do you think I need to change anything? I'm 5'4", 74 kgs on 16 to 1800 calories, averaging out 10K steps a day, 3 to 4 workouts a week. Fat loss is my primary goal and I've lost 3 kgs so far this round. Thank you. P.S. Just thinking about this, and should I have mentioned that I have polycystic kidneys too? Again, I don't suffer from symptoms and my kidneys are classified as normal, but I was diagnosed with a family and hereditary condition. Any adverse effect on diet / fat loss for my cystic body? So this literally could have been written by me. I was diagnosed with PCOS because I needed to have a laser surgery on my cervix when they found severe cancer cells because I had HPV. And then at that time, they also found out that I had cysts on my ovaries. I would say due to my lifestyle and also just a bracket of having PCOS that I happen to fall into, it's never really affected me. You are, as I said, the rule, not the exception, being like, oh, maybe I'm that person that only responds to lower calories, lower carbs. So that isn't an out and out reason why we'd be like, no. The fact that you're 5'4", dieting on 16 to 1800 calories on 10K steps and 3 to 4 workouts a week, this is the higher end of a deficit. And this is the lower. And by the way, I don't mean high and I don't mean low. I'm just talking about a spectrum, lower end of expenditure. And you've lost 3 kg so far. Absolutely, you're not being affected by it in this context. Maybe down the line, it might have an effect on fertility. I don't know. That's not for me to say. That's for your doctors or obs to say, whoever you're seeing for it. And same with the polycystic kidneys, if it's hereditary. And again, I have very high cholesterol genetically. It runs in my family. If it runs in your family and your lifestyle isn't going to be compounding that, making that worse, you have absolutely nothing to worry about. So yeah, those are all my thoughts. Emma, you've actually really looked into this for EIQ, haven't you? So I'll let you go a bit deeper into that.
I think in this situation, you're absolutely right. I don't think it is impacting you. The only thing that like would be the extra consideration for us as coaches is if someone was dieting like you are on what we would expect to be a significant enough deficit to start to see some weight loss after, you know, a month or two, and they weren't seeing that, we might be more likely to drop calories than someone who doesn't have PCOS. The reason for this is that in some instances, PCOS can affect your basal metabolic rate. This is not everyone by any stretch of the imagination. And you wouldn't really know if it's you, apart from the fact that you'll struggle to see results on like a quote unquote normal deficit or the same magnitude of results. Again, it's kind of compounded by what Chloe was just talking about, in that everyone finds fat loss hard. Mm-hmm. And because you only have your lived experience, it's hard to say, I'm the kind of person who only sees results doing this, because you don't have a comparison to you if you didn't have PCOS, or how someone else experiences hunger. You know, like the whole, I'm just a really hungry person. It's like, well, are you? Because like everyone experiences hunger and you've only ever experienced your own hunger. And then how you gauge that. So again, it's like, you know, people only perceive their own pain or their own experience. But there is genuine evidence to show that women with PCOS sometimes have a lower basal metabolic rate, which means that they may need to diet on lower calories to get the same result. Now, it's still not excessively low. I think people hear that and they forget to kind of look at the magnitude of effect here. And like the biggest magnitude of effect that we see is a 40% reduction in basal metabolic rate, which is like in an extreme condition. And even then, you know, like you would still not be dieting. I think some people think they need to diet on like 1,000 calories. It still wouldn't be something ridiculous like that, especially not with your energy expenditure, especially not with your current weight as well. And then the other thing to consider is that someone with PCOS also have insulin resistance. And again, like you're doing all the right things. Like the best thing you can be doing is exercising consistently, staying at a healthy body weight. You may benefit from taking some supplements, but again, if you're not having any problems, then I wouldn't even bother with that. There's some really interesting research on time-restricted eating and PCOS and fertility. So if that was ever something that you were struggling with, and actually I say if it's ever something you're struggling with, you probably want to preempt that. And I would imagine as well that if you do the things that are going to benefit fertility for longer, then you're probably going to benefit even more. So anyway, they showed that women who eat earlier in the day had a significant increase in their fertility rates, even in, I think the study was only like eight or 12 weeks, so like quite a short period of time. And it was the difference between having like a 900 calorie breakfast and then a small lunch, small dinner, and stopping eating at like 4 or 5 p.m. or flipping that round and having like a very small breakfast, medium-sized lunch, and like a big dinner, but later on in the evening, which is what most of us tend to do. But if you didn't want to go to that extreme, I honestly think you'd get a lot of the benefit from A, having consistent meals, B, front loading your calories as often as possible, and C, just trying to think like broadly. I think the biggest take home I get from time restricted eating studies, and there's really cool research on it all now, but I'd say the biggest thing is eat when you are most active. So that's why it's like, oh, eat breakfast and then move around all day. Great. Not eat your biggest meal in the evening and then sit down on the couch and go to bed. Especially when, and it's hard, right? Because people have busy lives. They don't get, you know, your evening meal is your most sociable. You don't get home from taking the kids everywhere until 8 p.m. Then you have this big meal and you go to bed at 10.
Yeah. And
that is not ideal from a metabolic standpoint, but it is going to take a little bit of like readjusting your life a little bit.
This is how, like, what we talk about. So that applies to everybody and anybody, but obviously if you're having hormonal hurdles in any case, and we've talked about the time-restricted feeding or eating, however you want to term it, fasting, we've talked about this so many times now. For anyone and everyone, that's a really good idea. But obviously, if you have hormonal imbalances or you have hormonal hurdles, it's a really good idea because it's a lifestyle change that's going to make managing it easier for you. You know, other than like thyroid issues where levothyroxine might be good, or in some cases, if it's hypothyroidism, surgery might need to happen. Or the menopause, in which in some cases, some women will benefit. Well, in a lot of cases, but still not all, some women will benefit from HRT. PCOS is a bit of a different kettle of fish, but doing everything, and this is what I meant when I said probably I was asymptomatic largely because of my lifestyle. Doing all the right lifestyle things applies across the board to everyone. And also with PCOS, it can come and go. It can be like a relapsing, remitting thing. So I've had scans where I've had several cysts on one or each of my ovaries, and then I've gone back and had none on one of them and maybe a couple on the other. And then I've gone back. So if you are asymptomatic, it would really allude to the hypothesis that it's not, that you are not going to be affected by it in the same way that, as Emma said, in extreme cases, it can reduce your BMR by, what did you say, 40%?
Yeah.
So I don't think you fall into that bracket, and I don't think it's something that you need to overthink.
Yeah.
Okay, anything on the live?
Yes. Okay. I was just looking up, right, because I think this is quite interesting. Like the way that PCOS is diagnosed is kind of like Chloe saying, it can kind of come and go because of some of the ways that it's diagnosed. So you can actually have cysts, but you don't have the other three or the other two like criteria, and thus you technically don't have PCOS because you're not having like irregular menstrual cycles, or
I have that,
or like higher androgen levels.
No, I doubt that.
So it's kind of like, it's those three things. It's like the cyst, the irregular cycle, and the higher androgen levels. And I think there's potentially like slightly different ways of diagnosing it in different parts of the world, and whether you need to meet two out of three or whatever. But yeah, sometimes I'm like, diagnosis is like, I think what's hard about PCOS is that often you get a diagnosis. In fact, almost always you get a diagnosis and it's like, okay, you have PCOS. Goodbye. There's nothing.
Bye.
It's just like, there you go. Yeah. Okay. Zoe, hi, lovely ladies. No question. Just wanted to say I've signed up for the third round. This is the best thing I've ever done for myself, and I appreciate you both so much. Aww.
Whoop, whoop. Love that.
Okay. Joe, my physio has told me to take painkillers, cocodamol, to enable me to do daily exercises. However, this seems to be impacting my digestive tract and really slowing it down. Any advice on helping this without taking constipation medication? I usually hit 5 or 6 portions of fruit and veg. Yeah, cocodamol can fuck you up. Also, that seems a little bit of a, like, well, I don't, yeah, okay, maybe.
Why? Can I ask why? Why are you taking Cocodamol?
Well, to enable her to do the daily exercises.
Yeah, but why? Why does it hurt?
Yeah, I don't know the context of that.
That's what I mean. Well, we need a bit more context. That is, and I don't, that's not a long-term solution for pain management and exercise.
Yeah, that's why I wonder if it's like post-surgery or something. Because I do remember when I got my shoulder surgery, and she says she's got a frozen shoulder. But when I got my shoulder pinned in, they'd put like a nerve block in, and I couldn't believe, like, it got me up in the morning and they were like, move your shoulder around. I was like, no. They were like, do it. It's like, it has to keep moving. And
yeah,
I think
of course.
It's an old school thing of, like, I remember when my grandma was talking to me about my back, and she was like, when I hurt my back, they put me in bed for 6 weeks. It's possibly the worst thing you could ever do for a bad back, like, literally just put you in a cast. Whereas now the advice is, obviously don't do anything, you know, don't go and deadlift at the gym, but it's like, keep moving. The whole, like, you have to keep moving. So I don't know if it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, short term, it's definitely not a long term solution though. But if it is short term, then you're just going to have to suck up the fact that everybody who takes Cocodamol or codeine or anything of that variant is going to be constipated for a while.
I don't know why Cocodamol though. I would have thought, I mean, not that I'm prescribing drugs here, but like ibuprofen or like, what's the...
Like an opioid, I would have thought. So everybody
I
that
would
I know,
thought an anti-inflammatory, like...
Depends, I mean, depends on the pain level here.
Yeah, but you get the
I would
point,
have thought
like
like
naproxen.
Oramol.
I would have thought naproxen.
Yeah, maybe. But then the, well, yeah.
Then you might get stomach ulcers. Like every drug has a
yeah,
side
there's
effect.
pros and cons of everything. And then I was thinking like Oramol, and then I was like, no, because ain't nobody exercising safely on Oramol.
Right, Olivia, thank you for covering my question, ladies. Fertility isn't a consideration for me, but I will definitely try the eating earlier / when I'm most active method. There you go.
I mean, like, everyone should, and again, you don't really need to because you're asymptomatic, so, but everyone should. We're big believers in that.
The thing that I'm still questioning about the benefits of some of the time restricted eating, because I think it's subconsciously most of us think that it's additive, and by that I mean, like, let's say it's one of us, right, already active, already trained consistently, have probably, well, this is what I'm questioning, have we saturated the benefit in terms of like insulin sensitivity, how well we clear blood glucose levels and like that kind of thing, that actually when we eat probably matters less. Whereas a lot of these studies are done in populations, mainly because they want to see some kind of effect in a small period of time, but they're done in populations where they are insulin resistant, or they have cardiovascular disease, or they are very overweight, or they do have PCOS, because otherwise you're not going to see a difference in 8 weeks. Like, I'm willing to bet that if we tested your insulin sensitivity, had you eat in the morning for 8 weeks and then tested it again, I don't think there'd be that much difference, because it's already high. You know, like, my blood pressure is not going to improve because it's not in a, you know, it's not high, so it's not going to come down. So you kind of looking at markers, and then I'm like, well, yeah, long term, I don't know. Like, would it be? I would imagine it might be, but that's the next question. It's like, would it actually benefit someone who's doing all the other stuff? And do people need to actually consider that or not?
But I think anything which positively impacts your circadian rhythm and your sleep cycle is going to have an effect in an 8 week period. But I agree what you mean. When you go broader picture, bigger picture, more questions asked, potentially not like blood glucose clearing. What was I going to say to you? Shit, what was I going to say? That's going to really annoy me now.
I do think you're right. Like, I think the research around circadian rhythm is interesting.
Very interesting. I do think that, I think honestly, 2 weeks from what I've read of, let's say, cutting out alcohol, like we were talking about alcohol tolerance and stuff like that, which I was reading about last night, because weirdly, what does this say about me that my clients are asking me about this?
When you sent me it, I was like, wait, are you?
Oh, wait, no.
So I was like, oh, this is great, but wait, is this for you?
Why? No. Really, I was asked about it. And so I was reading about it. And so you look at the kind of reverse effect of alcohol consumption. on circadian rhythm, and really it's 2 weeks typically that you see in human studies. You see that circadian rhythm come back to a much more regulated and healthy and kind of homeostatic rhythm. And that's the impact that it will have, again, on hormone regulation. And I do think that that would be shown in an 8 week period if people were doing a time restricted feeding window that saw them eating earlier in the morning upon waking and fasting late afternoon, early evening, a few hours before bed. I do think that would be, but I agree with Emma in terms of like insulin sensitivity. If you already lift weights, if you already exercise, if you already have muscle mass, if you already don't, not carrying excessive amounts of either subcutaneous and or visceral fat, I agree with Emma. I don't think that that would show much of a difference, no.
Where I am interested in it and where I do think it might show a difference is how you feel. And that was the interesting stuff about that research. It was like, oh, people experienced improved mood, less depressive states, improved sleep quality. And I was like, that interests me because we can all be improving on that. Again, I don't know if that would have like kind of been saturated, but I even think that, you know, actually not eating as close to bed improves your sleep, which improves your mood, which improves your behaviors, which, you know, it's still probably still worth doing, or at least testing out on yourself.
But again, you look at the hormonal responses of food, again, alcohol, sleep, serotonin, dopamine, you know, norepinephrine, and on and on and on we go. Of course it's all linked. Of course it's all going to have an impact on how you feel, your mood. What's it called? What's the word for it? Like the gray area of stress in terms of perceived stress and psychological stress, physiological stress, allostasis. It's been shown to have a huge impact on that. Behaviors, lifestyle behaviors, again, drinking, time restricted feeding, your cortisol, your basically really all of your stress hormones, your neurotransmitters, and your mood, how you feel. So it is very interesting to look at, and we can delve too deep into it to people that it's not relevant for, but it is something I think everybody should be considering in their day-to-day life.
Yes. Okay, we're up to date.
Oh, okay. I'm quite impressed by how many questions we've got on the post, given that we completely ran out of them a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, no.
I know, people are just so good with our calls to action. Okay, Nicholas Higgs. Hi, Clemmer. I've just got a quick question regarding hip pain when running. Just in this last week, I'm experiencing pain on the outside of my left hip. That sounds like bursitis to me. I'm not a physio, though, so don't take that with a big, fat bucket of salt. I'm not new to running. I've been a regular runner for years now, but this is a new pain. I don't get it while I'm walking. In fact, I can walk for hours pain-free. My online research suggests bursitis.
Oh!
Do I stop running for a while? Why am I only getting it running and not walking? Luckily, this is my only wobble in what has otherwise been a life-changing 8 weeks with you guys. What you're doing for us all is so bloody amazing. Thank you so much. Oh, thanks, Nicola. Okay, so unfortunately with runners, usually running does come with a timeline before things like this start happening, because running on treadmill is one thing because it's actually got like springs underneath the belt. But running on pavement, that is going to have real wear and tear on your joints, whether it's your ankles, your knees, your hips, your back even. It can really, after a certain period of time, that impact is going to have an effect. I have bursitis in my knee. Sounds to me, but I'm not a physio, so go get it looked out, like you have it in your hip. There's certain things you can do to help it to kind of calm down. You're obviously having a flare up of it for the first time right now. And that includes both manual physiotherapy, so kind of like joint massage, which is painful, but helps, anti-inflammatories, and stopping doing whatever it is that is making it flare up. So for you, it will be running for a period of time, a few weeks really. And then you can carry on, but it will come back. This is a recurring thing you're going to have to deal with now. It's okay. I have a lot of clients. It's a very normal thing for people that exercise to have to deal with. But I would actually change your modality of running. So again, take it from pavement to treadmill. And I'm sorry, it's just, annoying.
You know, it could be like, I mean, running on the beach is hard, but like beach or grass or something that's not pavement. Because if you still want to get outside, which is obviously way nicer for most people than running on a treadmill.
Yeah.
And yeah, just try and pick a route that's not just pavements.
Yeah. Anti-inflammatories will help, but yeah, there are options for you to keep running, as Emma said, as I've said, but it is, if I were you, this is a big kind of flag to think about new ways of running, and also just takes a serious, like, I mean, I would, you need to speak to a physio, but I would say at least 2 to 4 weeks away from running, just to let it calm down a bit. Okay, anything on the live? Okay, Natalie Alexandru. Hi, Clemma. I hope you're both having a lovely start to the week. I spoke to Chloe about the types of food to eat while I travel for work, which I do regularly. Chloe recommended. I don't know why I feel attacked already. Chloe recommended to reread the food Bible, which I did, but I wonder if there's anything else that you can recommend to help me with my food education. I think I made the mistake of having lower calorie breakfasts like yogurt and fruit and lunches like salads and fruit, which resulted in me being starving at dinner and overeating. I then fell in the fuck it bucket, which I'm now out of. I think I'm a bit scared of carbohydrates like pasta, bread and potatoes due to years of being told to remove them from my diet, but I know that they will help me feel more satiated. Not necessarily, but anyway, we don't want you to be scared of carbohydrates regardless. I would like to learn more so that when I go on my next trip at the end of March, I'm more prepared. Also, I'm trying to increase my fiber intake. Well, that's more your problem. I'm really struggling to get it over 20 grams of 6 portions of fruit or veg every day and around 80 grams of protein. Is there anything you'd recommend? P.S. I will be saying for the next round. Great. So yeah, you nailed it. Let's do bigger breakfasts and lunches, yogurt and fruit. These are both very fast digesting. Yes, there's fiber and fruit, but this is, and then salad and fruit. This isn't enough. Like, we need to up your protein for sure. We need to flesh out your meals. You absolutely don't need to be scared of carbohydrates. Now, we did this kind of last time in terms of like lower calorie carbs. Potatoes, very filling, starchy, brilliant, very low calorie, like 100% get some potatoes in your diet. Bread, again, lower calorie. It depends on portion control, but if you always go for the brown breads, the brown pastas, the brown everything, because they'll have more fiber in them. Then pasta, which is coming into higher calorie per portion of carbohydrate, and then rice. So, you know, be aware of that. But can you have carbohydrates in your diet and still have a lower calorie diet? Yes, 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 yes. Of course you can. So don't be scared of that. I would say 80 grams of protein is too low. Get that up. And I'd love to know what your vegetable sources are, because I think some people do salad veg. And then when I talk about this, which is largely just water, like cucumbers and lettuce. And if we talk about actually your like Mediterranean veg, your peppers, your mushrooms, which mushrooms are very meaty kind of veg, your mushrooms, your onions, your courgettes, and you really round it up, your calories are going to be tiny and your fiber is going to go through the roof. So we need to have a little talk about that.
Meaty vegetable is a mushroom. Meaty.
Mushroom, like.
No, I agree, but it is a funny thing to say.
Like a good replacement, I think. Mushroom. Oh, yeah. People love cauliflower steaks now. Can't go into a Soho house and not be offered a cauliflower steak. Like, I don't think you can call it a steak, guys. But people love a slab of cauliflower.
Yeah, when I was trying to not eat as much meat, it was always either cauliflower or what was the other thing they always give you?
Aubergine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you've got two options. And one
is a nut roast. Like, what is a nut roast other than obviously like nuts? Like, how does one make a nut roast?
Oh, I can't remember. My dad made it for Christmas that year. It wasn't great. It's very dry. And then he was like, oh, there's gravy, but we made it with the fat from the chicken.
Classic dad move. That's something my dad would do.
Oh,
people yeah. Always like, oh, you know, isn't your dad so much like Alan Partridge? I'm like, isn't every dad so much like Alan Partridge? Isn't it just a dad thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, anything on the live?
No.
Okay. Joe, Analytia, Analicia, who knows? Again, I like it. Hi, Clamour. I saw a video on Friday with my painful shoulder following your advice on a live, and I have a torn medial deltoid and a frozen shoulder. Oh, is this? Did Joe just ask about the thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I contemplated not signing up for the March round, but as I know I won't be able to fully take part in the workouts, but I decided that I am worth the investment, exclamation point. How much do I love that from you, Joe? I'm going to focus on my food intake and hitting my steps. Good girl. In terms of exercise, should I aim for 3 lower body sessions a week with a day off in between? I will, of course, be doing my daily physio exercises. Yes, I think that sounds like a brilliant plan, both in terms of re-signing up and your reasons why and your training.
Agree. And I also think a lot of the time it's when you're injured or when you're unwell or when you've got other stuff going on that you need the most coaching support. So I'm very glad that you're staying on.
Yeah, I agree. Does anyone mind if I scratch my back with a hairbrush?
Oh my God, nothing feels better when you've got... Wait, what kind of hairbrush do you have? Is it quite bristly?
Well, this is that one, that Babyliss one, but I think there's a Dyson one, which is more famous.
Oh, wait, are you going to put it on?
No, obviously not. I'm just going to use it to scratch
myself. Oh, right.
You just turn it on underneath.
Oh.
But the thing is, I don't know how to blow dry my hair, so I tried to use it and I just tangled all my hair in it. And I was like, what a waste of money.
I wouldn't know how to do that as well.
Just having a scratch. Oh,
I bet that feels great.
It feels so good. I'm so itchy.
Okay, right. We've got some on the live.
Okay.
Janet, courgette mushroom egg/egg white wraps for breakfast with a spring of cheese. Helped me up my breakfast veg.
Breakfast burritos are, I mean, all kind of burrito, every kind.
Okay, Lisa, a PT at my gym advised me to do some Russian deadlifts, but when I said I couldn't feel in my legs, but I could feel a pull in my back, he told me to stop. Should I steer clear of them or work on technique? Definitely work on technique.
What's a Russian deadlift? Earlier
in the training, this was my last bit of leg workout after 4 bits of training. It's probably technique.
What's a Russian deadlift?
I've got a feeling.
You're just going to Google it and then answer it.
Well, I'm just trying to... is it an RDL? Romanian deadlift.
Yeah. Romania is not Russia, people. As much as I'm sure.
I know, I'm not sure. Is. Wait. Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's quite a mistake to make.
What, maybe it's a deadlift with a kettlebell? That could be classified as a Russian deadlift. A Russian dead.
Oh, maybe people are just getting... I don't know.
One of my really good friends, Polly, who is the most beautiful person I've ever met in my life, she's Russian. And she has now got Bodhi bang into Masha the Bear, which she says, and I quote, Russia's biggest export behind vodka. Masha the Bear. Apparently it's like the best. It's like crack for kids. Well, it is. Bodhi's addicted to it. All of you with kids.
What is it? A cartoon?
Yeah, it's like a kid's show about a bear called Masha.
Oh.
Who, unsurprisingly, is Russian.
There we go. Okay, Susie. Afternoon late. Oh, by the way, feel free to post a video and we can look at your form.
Mm.
Afternoon, ladies, on a work meeting, but dropping this in here so I can listen back. A quick question on cardio, and do excuse my ignorance here. With 15 minutes additional cardio at the end of closed workouts this round, I was using my cross trainer, but it's broken for the last week. I've been walking instead, but doing about half an hour, not 15 minutes. Is there a difference in doing this post-workout as opposed to just adding half an hour to my walks when I do them, i.e. not immediately after the workout? Surely cardio is cardio whenever it's done, or am I missing the benefit of doing it straight after a weights workout?
No, you can do it whenever you want. That's completely up to you. The reason I put it in after a weights workout is because I want my clients to know that we don't do cardio-specific workouts on the EC method because we don't need to. Just say do 20 minutes on a this or that or whatever. If the client wants to, if we need a new tool in our armory, refat loss. So we just don't do it here. But the reason I put it on is because, as I've noted earlier in the live, I think cardio is still important. That's why. But yeah, if you're getting in your walks every day, if you're nailing your steps, if you feel like you have some kind of cardio expenditure every week, I'm happy. It's very subjective. I'm not going to be militant about it.
Yeah. Oh, if you can fit it in somewhere else easier, fine. I guess it's nice as a bit of a cool down. And then also you add it in because it's like, you're probably going to, you know, a lot of people are already going to be at the gym. So
yeah,
just plug it on the end. Right. So we did the last one.
Yeah. On the live or on the question?
On the question.
Okay. Melanie Oppie or Opie. Melanie, I feel like you've been here a while and I still don't know whether it's Opie or Oppie. So you got to let me know. I've been doing Emma's gym workouts Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Chloe's full body on a Saturday. Having switched to Chloe's home workouts, excuse me, last week as it was half term, I wondered about swapping the full body for Chloe's leg workout. I thought it might help me tone up my flabby legs and butt. I then wondered, is this where I hold my body fat, whether this would just make me look more bulky? So my question is, although you can't sport reduce body fat, what aesthetic differences can you make by building muscle? Or is this only something that a competitive bodybuilder should really worry about and it wouldn't make much difference for someone like me, especially as it's the fourth workout of the week? So if you have body fat there, then yes, by increasing your volume, again, by like training sessions per week, training frequency or progressive overload, if you have body fat there, of course, you're going to make the area look bigger. But if you're here doing the weighted workouts in a calorie deficit and a negative energy balance via steps, cardio, whatever it is, no, it's a good thing to be doing for body recomposition. It will look better. So it kind of, it depends is the answer. Why are you laughing and what's your answer? What?
Actually not even relevant.
You just let your mind wander. Where did you go?
I was just thinking about this little dog.
What dog? The one you showed me a photo of the other day.
What one was that?
No, we were just talking and you just started laughing and lifted up your phone and showed me a little dog. Really weird.
No, it was a different one. I just thought it. Yeah, no, it doesn't matter.
Okay, fine.
Nothing to add, really.
Okay, fine. Okay, guys.
We'll be back later in the week with the last live of this round.
Yeah. Okay. Bye, guys.